Content note, Veronica Mars contains heavy themes, and this episode contains storylines concerning child abuse and murder.
A long time ago on Veronica Mars.
We have a new Duncan, Detective Duncan. Meg had written about a kid she babysat being psychologically abused, and he and Veronica set out to find out who it is.
So to do that, Veronica takes on all of Meg's babysitting gigs, and let's just say the toxic masculinity of Neptune is flourishing in the under-10s.
She also befriends Gia Goodman, which entails going to the sleepover of nightmares if your nightmares include seeing a child punished, having your boobs mocked, and enduring some extremely basic bore chat about pizza.
Ugh, God. In all that free time Veronica has left over, she investigates the plastic surgeon who claims he witnessed Logan murdering Felix.
And the Casablancases deal with the repercussions of Richard's scams and escape. The boys get trust funds, and Kendall gets nothing. Things aren't looking good with her backup career of Logan. But what about her backup, Duncan? On the boat by myself, if you ever want to come by, smoke a J and fool around, I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
And putting a trench coat over my pajamas and coming to pick you up, I'm Helen Zaltzman.
You're listening to Veronica Mars Investigations, Season 2, Episode 7.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Helen.
Isn't that another weird, weird reference for the title of this show? Because this Dirty Dancing line is an adult man telling the family of his adult woman lover to treat her as an adult woman, not a baby, but they're applying it to a plot about the psychological abuse of children.
Help.
Is it just like word association? This show loves word association.
Stream of consciousness titling.
If anything, reason would just be a disadvantage.
Yeah, that would just slow you down, get in the way. Before we get into talking about today's episode, Helen and I have a very exciting announcement. I am beside myself. So beside myself. There's two of me and we're standing right next to each other. You all remember when we watched and live tweeted Pride and Prejudice, the BBC miniseries?
Best day of my fucking life, Jenny.
And mine. Okay, we're going to be doing this again with a piece of media, a film that is maybe at the opposite end of the spectrum. Helen's never seen it. I have watched it about 8,000 times. But I haven't seen it in a while, so hopefully it's aged well. We're going to be watching Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
I'm very excited for my induction into this piece of entertainment.
Helen, I fucking cannot wait. I can't wait. We're going to be watching together on May 30th. That's a Saturday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. in the UK.
Shit o'clock in Australia. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Australia.
Again.
It's streaming on Hulu in the US. It's also available on YouTube. It is a campy horror romp starring Elvira, who, if you're not familiar, is the Mistress of the Dark. She's sort of like goth Dolly Parton.
Perfect.
I love her so much, and I'm so excited to force Helen to watch this movie. Hooray!
I'm excited to be forced for the only time in my life. And please do join us over on our Twitter, which is VMIPod. I love to live tweet stuff, and I'm excited for your excitement.
Yes! And wow, I am so excited to hear your impressions about this icon from my childhood. And I'm sure we'll be coming up with some zippy hashtag that everybody else can use. You can tweet along with us as you're watching too. Hooray!
Something to look forward to.
Yes.
And also, it was just very nice to hang out with a bunch of you when we did Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, yeah.
So join us again. Are there cravats in this, Jenny? You seem very excited by the cravats in Pride and Prejudice.
You know what? There might be, because there's one ancient dude who might still be rocking cravats, or at least like an ascot.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a cravat and an ascot?
You know, I'm not really the person to ask.
I feel like you are.
For some reason, ascots seem like more modern.
Hmm.
But maybe they're just the same fucking thing.
On to this episode of Veronica Mars and an incredible new Duncan. Detective Duncan!
He's got a trench coat. He's got a fedora.
Well,
he's got a magnifying glass.
He's got a polo
neck. He's got a bottle of scotch in the second drawer on the left.
He's got a Murphy bed. He's got a couple of ex-wives down in Reno.
I regret to inform you, Helen, that the first thing that happens is Duncan is trying to make out with Veronica, but she won't stop doing lines along with the Big Lebowski.
She's got to do the cool girl thing, you know?
Yeah.
Dudeness or duder or El Duderino if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Veronica, you need to stop being the dude.
Stoner bowler doesn't do it for you?
A little.
Logan arrives, and so it is awkward, isn't it, when your best friend and your girlfriend's ex turns up to be the third wheel, because he lives in your hotel suite now.
Yeah, the only thing that I could think of that would make this a little more awkward is if the stepmother of your other friend, who your friend has been sleeping with, would also show up at your teens-only hotel suite.
I do admire, though, that Kendall immediately knows who Veronica is. Thanks to season 2, episode 3.
Yeah, great memory.
Even though it's been a couple of months.
iPod girl. With a waxy-eared boyfriend. It's my world. Like this big.
Duncan's like, eh.
And so when she and Logan go off to bang, Veronica is no longer in the mood to quote the Big Lebowski or neck with Duncan. And she's like, aren't you bothered by this? And Duncan's like, I'm not bothered because I'm a guy.
Ah, yes. What cares have guys when it comes to other guys doing sex stuff? And she is also, they say, like 25, which is a whole lot closer to their ages than their parents. One thing that happens in this scene that I appreciate about Logan is that he makes his, like, little endurance joke. A reminder that Logan is, like...
sex person?
Not that I enjoy the bragging of, teen boys so much, but I definitely prefer a teen boy who's like, I'm really good at being a sexual partner rather than like, I'm great at conquering women. Look at my trail of conquest. As far as teen male bragging goes, I appreciate his angle.
I think for him, the brag would be to have done a good job for the other person, right?
Right, right. Which is nice. It's because you're thinking about the other person.
Well, in a way. I think it sort of still rebounds to him.
Oh, true.
But it's a way of him feeling like someone cares that he's there, given his family situation.
Oh, Logan.
But although this is displeasing to Duncan, his stress levels amp up shortly after. At school, he grabs Veronica because he's found in Meg's computer that they rescued the other episode that she had been emailing Child Protection Services about a kid she babysits who is being psychologically abused. And she didn't name the kid, but Duncan's like, we have to find him. And Veronica silently agrees.
And then we get the credits at 8.5 minutes.
After the credits, Veronica studies the email printouts while Duncan paces and rants. And we learn that the kid in question is aged 7 to 10. And one of the punishments is to write lines in a book, including, I was bad, I deserve to be punished, and Meg may have stolen such a book. So they're going to break into her house on Sunday night while the Manning parents are out at church group.
Hooray!
And I was like, why make it so hard? Why not ask Lizzie Manning? But she's not in this episode at all.
Yeah, for budgetary reasons, they couldn't ask Lizzie Manning.
Maybe she was sent to Catholic boarding school or something.
Based on the pearls we last saw her in, that seems like the most likely option.
So this is what's going to keep Veronica busy this episode. Going through the list of Meg's babysitting clients, which Duncan seems to know, and it includes the Goodmans. Just FYI. Remember them from episode 1?
Yes, of course. And I love how Duncan is like listing all these clients and Veronica looks shocked, like Veronica isn't the busiest person in Neptune. And then Duncan helpfully explains to Veronica what having a job is and doing work is all about. Thanks, Duncan.
She babysat a lot. I think they call it a part-time job. It's when you do this thing called work and strangers pay you instead of the allowance fairy.
Ah, the allowance fairy. Elusive in Neptune outside the O-9er zip.
Yeah, I thought maybe this was a glimmer of socialist Duncan mocking his own privilege. Because, of course, he doesn't have to have jobs.
Right.
Also, Meg has been out of action for a while. What, a couple of months? So wouldn't the babysitting gigs have been filled by now?
Snapped up by the competition?
Yeah. Keith strolls in and asks if Duncan's working for Veronica now, because he's seen this before.
Right, in lieu of Wallace, has Duncan been roped in to go to Favor Town?
Yeah, except really it's Veronica doing a lot of favors for Duncan that's extremely time-consuming, because it's her who's having to take all these diabolical babysitting gigs And her first port of call is the teacher, Ms. Hauser, who straight away you know is a super fun time because she says,
STDs will kill you. Sexually transmitted diseases are no joke, Jane.
I wasn't laughing, I sneezed.
See how much you're sneezing when you have gonorrhea.
She kicks out Jane, who we met in episode 2 of this season when she was on crutches and hadn't dinged Jackie's car. She kicks her out for sneezing.
Rude.
Which suggests that Ms. Hauser is perhaps a little too wound up by minor things. There's also a skeleton by the door, and there's a poster for milk. The slogan is good, shaken or stirred.
Ew! No! What? Shaken?
They put that in for you, Jenny. Easter egg for Jenny Owen Young's. A poisoned egg.
Boo! A poisoned milky egg.
I also love that on her nameplate on her desk, they stuck Ms. over Mrs.
Oh my God, that's the best part. As we learn, Ms. Hauser's husband maybe left her for a gentleman, which so stoked for Mr. whatever his last name is.
Right.
Is it also Hauser? Has she just gone from Mrs. to Ms.? So hope he's living his best life somewhere, but she's busy reading You're 40 and He's Gone, Life After Divorce.
It's not a real book, unfortunately. But if it was, I like that they made it sound deliberately punitive.
Yeah. Like, what did you do?
So the exercise they have to do in this class is to pair up and tell each other that they have an STD, which seems like a weird thing to get school kids to do, even though it is important to be open about your sexual health with potential partners.
Yes. But I love that Veronica and Gia pair up for this exercise, although they don't actually really do the assignment.
Well, Veronica is trying to befriend Gia for the babysitting purposes, and Gia is open to it.
Mrs. Hauser, mine's wrong. Isn't this a flower?
No, Gia. Chlamydia is not a flower.
Well, we have it on like a trellis at our beach house.
Your trellis is a whore.
You're very funny, Veronica. Really, you should know that about yourself.
Thank you, Gia.
I used to be funny at my old school. People here don't get me.
I think your wit totally translates.
You think? I don't know. I used to have like a zillion girlfriends at my other school. Here, all I meet are guys.
Dick and Gia are continuing their flirt.
Ew! Gia, run! You're too good for him.
Veronica manages to turn this class exercise into an invitation to Gia's for a sleepover. So it's been very productive for her. And then the bell rings. It really pisses me off in a TV show when the teacher's like, class, I've arranged this elaborate exercise and it will be 1 minute long because that's when the class ends.
This is right up there with every single microphone in television and film history feeding back when somebody goes up to it in terms of how annoying this is. This is utter trash. That's all.
Or maybe lessons there are only 3 minutes long. But as everyone files out, Veronica goes up to Ms. Hauser, and offers the babysitting services and is briskly rebuffed.
Ha!
Oh, Ms. Hauser is played by Kari Coleman, who was in Switched at Birth.
You're fucking kidding me.
Like all of these single episode actors of Veronica Mars. It's amazing.
It's so bonkers.
And on to her next mark, Jessica Fuller, whom you may remember from the Argyle and Pearls mother and daughter combo from season 1, episode 17, about the Kane scholarship when her daughter was being sabotaged. And she presided over the Mr. Brooks hearing. Remember that, Jessica?
Oh my gosh!
In episode 17 of season 1, there was a pram conspicuously in their home, but the kid that Veronica's babysitting is like 10 years old.
Yeah,
so is there a baby that no one cares about, or does he just ride around in the pram a lot? And she has to endure a lot of shit chat this episode. Jessica is showing off a lot of framed certificates. Whoa. And her husband is playing ball with Edwin, wearing a tie.
Dude, what kind of 1% bullshit?
Edwin is dressed as Mr. Pope. He's got khakis and a sleeveless Argyle sweater on.
Uh-huh.
It's weird because Jessica says, oh, we had to let Meg go because of that boyfriend of hers. And I would have thought parents love boyfriend Duncan because he's so polite and he seems very well behaved. And also because his parents have such big standing in town. Don't you think?
Yeah, you would think. But also they seem very serious about their child. And thus I would assume very serious about child care.
Oh, maybe they mean that awful boyfriend she had before Duncan, the guy without a name.
Oh, yes.
That real shit.
Maybe that guy. Did you notice that when Edwin is coloring, someone who I assume is named Josh on the props team has Greeked the crayons to be Joshola brand instead of Crayola.
That's pretty cute.
I like it. Oh my god, maybe that is the kid who plays Edwin actually named Josh. Did they do it for this child? I have to find out. Why didn't I think of this sooner?
Edwin.
Wow, did you just say that in Abel Coon's voice?
No, that'd be Edwin. Logan Fields. So I guess they couldn't call them Loganolas because that would seem like it was for the character. The assistant property master, uncredited, is called Joshua Cheek.
Nice.
And he's uncredited, so he might as well get his kicks from somewhere.
Get in there.
Right. Edwin's reading Moby Dick until the scheduled time of 7 p.m. And there's a bit of tension between Duncan and Veronica this episode. He calls up and he's like, I find it a bit weird to picture you babysitting. Veronica's like, oh, because it was Meg's thing and you used to do it with your girlfriend Meg.
And doesn't Duncan kind of seem like maybe he doesn't know what she's talking about? That's the way it kind of like struck me, that like maybe he was not the boyfriend hanging around while she was babysitting.
Guy with no name.
I don't know.
Veronica's forgotten about the guy with no name. The Fullers come back early. And Mr. Fuller sees Veronica out, gives her cash, and then says this weird thing.
Thanks a lot, Veronica. We'll definitely call you again.
That'd be great.
We have a standing dinner date with friends on Fridays. Saturdays, of course, I'm on the boat by myself. If you ever want to come by, smoke a J and fool around. We usually do a day trip about once a month with my boss, if you don't mind working on a Sunday. Oh, I almost forgot. Edwin drew this for you.
Oh my god, just why?
Casually propositions her mid-sentence. Disgusting. Dude. And then he gives her the thing that Edwin is colouring in, which is a very neat, very vividly coloured drawing of Veronica with her head cut off.
Why the fuck? On every level.
She's having a just unremittingly boring and awful time this episode.
This is bad.
I admire her stamina, honestly.
Yeah, bless her. Hang in there, Veronica. When you want Ms. Hauser to give you a freaking babysitting job and she won't bite, you know what you gotta do? Take a little shirtless picture of a photoshopped lamb with a fake hunk body, stick it in her little teacher's mailbox while you're carrying around some babysitting flyers.
Yes, because it's the police fundraising bachelor auction, and disappointingly, we don't see this.
Bummer. Enormous bummer.
Ah, I was so annoyed because I thought they were teeing it up all episode that we would get to see it in the third act.
We're not that lucky, Helen.
Nothing. But Ms. Hauser immediately is slightly warmed up by this flyer.
Warmed up is one word.
Her engine. It is revved.
Yes.
I also did think, depending on her custody agreement, could she get the child's father to step in for the night?
That would have been nice, but it doesn't serve the plot, Helen.
I just thought, what an incredibly time-consuming plan for Veronica to have to get in with all of Meg's babysitting clients and wait for them to have a day when they needed her to babysit. Oh, and then it gets worse. Like, she's having such a terrible time. I'll forgive her now for the Big Lebowski shit at the beginning, because everything else that she has to do this episode sucks so much.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ms. Hauser brings her silent, impassive face son, Albert, to the Mars home for the babysitting, and she's bossing Veronica around about his food and not watching TV. There's a lot of helicopter parents in this town. So then when she leaves to get her police company on.
Ugh, nightmare.
What do you feel like doing? I've got some games.
I want ice cream.
Oh, your mom just said,
I want ice cream.
I got that. However,
so Veronica hypnotizes him with television, gets Duncan to bring over ice cream, and then this kid is knocked the fuck out when Ms. Hauser comes back all juiced up. With her fucking date that she bought with Deputy Sax.
Oh, ring-a-ding-ding.
Ring-a-ding-ding indeed. Also, right at the top of the scene, we get to see back up for 1 second. He's panting on the ground.
Aww.
When the doorbell rings. Veronica goes to the door and she's like, what is it, your day off? No bark? Nice.
Okay, two nice things happened, Veronica.
Yeah.
Got a backup bounce. She does manage to get a handwriting sample from Albert's bag. Well, he's all hopped up on TV and ice cream. So I guess it worked. But having like ingratiated herself with these parents, are they going to be calling for repeat custom? And if it's her teacher, is she going to get a bad grade if she refuses to babysit Albert again?
Be careful, Veronica. You're planting too many seeds.
So then the Goodman house. Veronica turns up for the sleepover with her Ninja Turtles sleeping bag.
Hell fucking yeah. I gotta know. Helen, I gotta know. I need to know. Were the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as popular in England as they were in the United States?
Yeah, they were huge.
Yes.
But I...
love to hear it.
I was not allowed to participate because we weren't really allowed branded stuff in my childhood.
Okay, that's very, like, progressive and responsible
no,
of your parents.
I don't know. I think
but
it was
if
just
you
cheaper.
Had to choose a favorite Ninja Turtle...
I don't know what their different personalities are, Jenny.
Okay, let me just run it down for you really quick.
Which one's the Logan and which one's the Duncan?
Right, exactly. Well, Duncan is sort of the Leonardo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Michelangelo is like Dick. He's like, what's up? And then like Raphael is like Logan because he's like he has a lot of anger issues. And then Donatello, do we have like a recurring super smart person on this show? I guess Mac would be the closest. Mac is Donatello. Cool. Nailed it. And then Keith is like Splinter. And then Mr. Eccles is like Shredder.
Wow.
And then like all the like, you know, one episode 09ers are the Foot Soldiers, the Foot Clan. Cool. Thanks for listening.
Are all shows truly the same?
All shows are one show.
It's the same characters, but different shells. There's not only multiple Duncans in this show, but multiple dimensions of Duncans.
100%. Mm. Duncan is like when you stand in one in like a hotel bathroom that has mirrors on both sides of the wall and they reflect back forever. There's just a million Duncans. Infinity Duncan.
When I was 8, I went to visit my grandmother in South Africa for the only time I can remember. And her bathroom had the infinity mirrors and I was wowed. I was absolutely wowed, Jenny.
That was your first Infinimirror experience?
First and most important. Why would you even need it? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows what its purpose is?
Maybe she was fond of the back of her head. She's dead now, I can't ask.
Ah.
It's important to ask your grandparents these questions while you still can. How
yes.
do you feel about the back of your own head? A friend of mine knows when she needs to break up with a partner when she can no longer stand the sight of the back of their head.
Yow. Deep, dark, Helen. It's a deep, dark cut. I think it kind of is. Okay.
So back to the Goodman house. It's a shoes-off house, and they've got a cupboard where they keep the shoes, and it's all labeled. So Veronica gets to put her shoes in the guest section.
So very intense.
There's also a grand piano by the door.
Weirdly placed grand piano.
Very
weird.
That's
not where you put a grand piano.
Veronica hears girlish laughter.
After clocking the like zillions of pairs of shoes in the guest section of the shoe rack.
Surprise!
Zoom in, dolly out. No, nightmare. There's a million girls. They're all O-Ninery. They're watching a Rihanna music video. They're all kind of dancing. Two of them, this is some real fucking shit, Helen. Two of them like are doing the... I'm a girl standing up, you're a girl sitting down, I'm braiding your hair, and they're both dancing to the Rihanna song at the same time.
Ultimate sleepover move.
Helen, this is the stuff of pornography opening scenes.
There's no pillow fight.
Not yet. Gotta work up to that, Helen.
The girl having her hair braided is Madison Sinclair.
Madison Sinclair's definitely... there and she sucks.
They all suck, really, but none of the others are allowed on-camera lines or names.
Hooray!
They are just rent-a-girls, and they're all dancing to Ponda Replay, and what I thought was weird was that there are some clear shots of the actual video, so I'm assuming there was some deal with Rihanna's label.
Right. Damn, that was early days for Rihanna. Goddamn.
Yeah. Have you ever been to such a girls' night, Jenny, where you dance and braid each other's hair?
Oh, Helen. Gosh, no. I mean, I've had the distinction in my friend groups. I was voted most likely to get my hair braided by straight girls at sleepovers, for sure.
Oh,
but
was that your
it was never
caption?
Like this. Yes, absolutely. That was the superlative I landed.
I admire how little effort Veronica is making at this point of her incredibly busy week to even act like this is an experience she's going to participate in. But some useful evidence comes to light. In this appalling sleepover, while she's in the kitchen with Gia doing something with snacks and bowls, Gia introduces her little brother Rodney, who's not there to chat. He's doing some thank you cards, but then he knocks over some water and he's like, oh no! And he's scrubbing the rug, even though it's just water.
I hate this.
Madison and one of the unnamed girls are comparing butts.
Oh my God, you are crazy. Her butt is so much smaller than mine.
Hers is just higher.
Just shove this off the edge of a cliff so that we may never encounter it again. This whole situation.
And while they're absorbed in that important butt comparison work, Veronica gets to witness Woody coming in and telling Rodney, I'm going to have to tell your mother about this. You know the rules. Oh, Veronica, hi. Oh, don't want to interrupt your party. I'll just take Rodney off.
What is this?
To the home jail.
I hate it.
The stuff Veronica does for a case. I know that she's been in some heady situations before, but this episode truly seems beyond endurance.
Way above her pay grade.
I tend rarely to be bored, but if there's bad chat happening and I can't escape from it, then I really start sinking into myself.
Good thing they're only talking about how many carbs there are in pizza, which I know is your favorite topic.
Veronica, do you know how to do dreadlocks? Don't you just love pizza? I ate a whole pie once. You're kind of right.
But this party is so painfully basic, and I was thinking Lily Kane would never...
No.
Then Mother Goodman comes home and she's got a strange costume. She's wearing a white shirt and wide white pants, so almost like a hospital orderly. But over that, she's wearing like a glittery metallic t-shirt.
It's very strange.
Veronica spies on her, putting her shoes away, as is the rule of the Goodman house. And then her and Woody and Rodney silently go off in a very slow and ceremonial way.
This does not look good. Helen, I don't know what the fuck.
But then the party moves out by the pool. Veronica is not in a swimsuit, resolutely. Jesus, like, there's some real escalation from Madison.
Pretty Woman is still my favorite movie. Vivian is like my hero. She's a hooker. Only because she had to be. She's a hooker.
You should put a tattoo right here so people will have something to look at.
What if Veronica got a tattoo of a dog in a hat, huh? Popular chest tattoo of
Neptune.
Oh,
yeah. Honestly, Madison has a, like, armband tattoo that is really unfortunate. So hopefully we can all just take that tattoo advice she's handing out with a grain of salt.
I haven't seen the film Pretty Woman probably since the early or mid-90s. It wasn't a fave of mine. I imagine now I would be thinking too much about the power dynamic in that relationship, say. Or attitudes towards sex workers in the film.
Sure.
But it seems like in a very short conversation about Pretty Woman, they all managed to exhibit quite problematic attitudes towards it. So Veronica decides to stir instead and ask Gia how things are going with Dick. Madison's Dick. Oh, shit. But then right on cue, the Casablancas brothers turn up, lurching around drunk.
For the panty raid. Here for the panty raid. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
Is that a thing Americans do say, Jenny?
Panty raid? Oh, yeah. That's when, if I'm not mistaken, a group of gentlemen will, I think, go to a place and raid it for panties. I don't know if the idea is to get the panties, like, if the idea is to get women to, like, convince them to give you panties off of their person, or if you, like, slink into one of their rooms and steal their frilly underthings. Unknown.
And I love that Veronica is like, at the mention of panty raid and spin the bottle, she is like, fuck this. I am going home to my waterbed and my hairy green cushion.
Yeah, she hit her limit.
Is this the same night that Duncan gets all dressed up in a black polo neck to go raiding the Manning house?
She's a busy lady. What's up with this Mission Impossible fucking turtleneck dealio?
Or breaking into a vault in a Bond movie per Veronica, or going to a poetry reading per Logan.
Or giving, you know, the latest update about a forthcoming Apple product.
Oh, yeah. Did you have milk tray in America?
Milk tray.
It was an affordable chocolate selection. And there was a long ad campaign about the milk tray man who was dressed like Duncan and who would break into your house to leave you a box of milk tray.
Wow.
Yep.
What?
Yeah.
So sort of like turtleneck Santa, but just for one type of chocolate?
Yes, sexy turtleneck Santa.
Oh, sexy. Okay.
I think by the mythology of the ad, he was sexy. Dudes in turtlenecks climbing through windows. Depends whether that does it for you or not.
Well, that's what Duncan's up to.
Hopefully Duncan will leave the Mannings a house gift. He's a very polite boy. Veronica and Duncan, in the dark, scuttle up to the Manning house. Duncan retrieves the key from under the flower pot. The house is dark inside. They go out to Meg's room. Her bed seems so short. It's like 3 feet long.
The Logan Lily trade secret of hiding shit in the vents, staying strong.
If you're over 30, do you just not think to ever look in the vent lest a child has hidden something in it? Like, do you just forget? Because otherwise, wouldn't every parent just be, well, pretty sure this will be it?
I think by the time you're a parent, you've already filled up and deleted so much of the RAM in your brain so many times that you no longer think about like needing to hide something when you were 16.
Good point. Also, that would explain why Meg has the word diva hanging on her wall. It's like an ornament in the shape of the word diva, even though her parents seem like the kind of people that would frown
on
that exuberance, an expression of female power. This book that Meg's hiding in the air vent is a bit fucking bleak. It's filled with the words, "The path to God is paved with righteousness."
I fucking hate when I find a book like this filled with that sentence written over and over again. Oof, it sucks.
While Veronica is staring aghast at this and also comparing the handwriting samples from the kids she babysat, Duncan espies an envelope in the vent and pockets it without Veronica knowing. Stealth Duncan on a little sub-mission.
And then Veronica detects, yes, classic, gender in the handwriting?
This isn't little boy's writing.
It has to be. Meg said.
What if she was covering?
I interviewed a graphologist once and his opinion was you could not tell gender from handwriting.
Yeah.
She spots a photo of the three Manning sisters and realizes Meg was covering her little sister Grace, whom we saw at the hospital. They go into her room and in the closet there are more books filled with lines.
Oh my god,
there are also
so
thumping noises.
Many of them.
Why would you keep these books? Or is it just so that your child sees the books and remembers the misery all over again?
Yo, definitely that.
Right.
Definitely that.
I haven't thought my punishments through.
So Veronica's, you know, ticking against the back wall of the closet, thinking to herself, surely there must be a secret compartment, and there is! She pops it open, and there's Grace.
How do people have these features in their houses?
This has to be a custom build by Mr. Manning, surely, or by somebody who owned the house first, who was also a creep.
Maybe they put them in where they're like, you could install a panic room here. They're like, aww.
Yes. Don't bother showing me a house that doesn't have a place I could put a panic room, real estate agent.
I like a room for every emotion.
Yeah!
Grace is sat there in a 90 looking scared, big rings under her eyes, and she shouts at Veronica, which is seems odd. I would feel like she would speak very quietly if she's scared of her parents and doesn't know where they are. And have her parents also just gone out to church group and they're like, it's all right, we'll just put the kid away.
Yeah, what is this? This sucks. This sucks a lot.
Veronica starts to phone, but she's interrupted by Mr. Manning with a baseball bat holding it by the middle. So presumably he's just going to twirl it like a baton into her and Duncan.
Yeah. He calls the fucking sheriff's office.
Lam struts in looking very arrogant, but then this chilling dialogue happens. I really had goosebumps in this bit.
I came home from church and found them in my daughter's room, rifling through her things.
We were trying to help Grace.
Shut
They've
up.
Been abusing her. They
Shut
had her locked in the
evil
closet.
Little
Go.
Mouth.
Go look.
Nobody believes
look
a word you
look
say, you filthy lying
right.
whore.
Okay, enough, okay? Stop it. Up. Get up.
Yeah.
Lam is doing his usual swaggery stuff, and he cuffs Veronica, then Duncan, and Veronica whispers to him, there's a room behind the closet. But Lam marches them out and very conspicuously does the head push into the car, presumably so the Mannings can see it.
Right.
Then he goes back in, and Mr. Manning is wankling on as Lam goes straight to the closet.
What are you doing? You can't do that. I'm the victim here. You have no right to just come into my house and start poking around.
funny. I heard my father give that exact speech once.
And oh my fucking god, did this show just make me on Lam's side?
Perhaps just for a moment. We get this window. It's a very foggy window.
Detective Lam is the MVP in this. I properly gasped at the end, even though I've seen this whole thing before. More than once.
Mm-hmm.
When he leaves again, he sternly drives Veronica and Duncan away, but only around the corner. Then he lets them out and uncuffs them and drives off again and just parks outside the Manning kitchen, psyching them out as they placidly wash up, having presumably already recovered from the home invasion and Sheriff uncovering their imprisoned child. So I thought this was a really amazing ending to the episode.
Yeah.
Not as amazing as if they'd shown the bachelor auction, though.
It would be cool if they had a post-credit scene that was like a Lam and Sax with their shirts off, with just like a little like shirt collar and bow tie, like Chippendale style, and the cuffs, but no shirt, just like flexing.
That would have been generous.
Hell yeah. That would have been generous is one word.
The pace of this episode is funny because suddenly they're picking up again the plotline of Richard Casablancas fucking off, leaving a big flaming turd of a financial scam behind him, having not done anything about it since episode 3 of the season. And I was feeling like it was a bit soapy to let quite a lot of time pass in terms of the rest of the plots, but act like no time has passed in this plot.
It is weird. I guess they're just like not as committed to spending like an equal amount of time with everybody's plot or like with every character in every episode.
But it was funny because it was like, okay, we'll take the elements of that plot where you have a class with Mr. Pope talking about future business leaders of America, although things have progressed there because Cassidy's doing very well.
Right, right.
Dick has done very badly. He's not going to be a future business leader of America. He's just a future piss artist of America.
Is a piss artist someone who does art in the snow with their pee?
They're not even that dynamic, Jenny.
Oh.
Their art is doing fuck all.
I see. Thank you.
Then we go to Casa Casablancas, where the living room is looking very formal, like there's a wake happening. But instead, it's the lawyer Barry Randall reading the Casablancas' the terms of Richard's financial arrangements. The house and cars are paid in full. All other assets, though, pretty fucked.
Yeah, I guess this is something we've been wondering about. And here are some answers. The boys can't have their trust funds until they're 21 unless their mom, biological mom, signs off on them. And Big Dick put absolutely nothing in Kendall's name. So she is S-O-L.
She really fucked this whole money-grabbing marriage. Maybe she truly married him for love.
Oh.
But if not, why?
He's such a douche, though.
I know. Yeah, but some people love douches.
That's true.
Then their mom turns up. Fleetingly mentioned last episode, and she completely ignores Kendall, who lets her in the house.
Ugh.
And you can tell you're supposed to think of her as a very different kind of woman because she's got cropped blonde hair and she's wearing a suit. I found it hilarious that while she's like, boys, I got you some sandwiches, I'm such a good mum, and Kendall's just in the back eavesdropping whilst very slowly dusting a vase. She's like, yes, I got here so quickly, even though it's been like, what, 2 months?
Months?
At least a month.
Yeah.
And she's like, Mommy's here now. God, your dad was such a flashy asshole. And Dick was like, yeah, shut up, Mom. Just sign my shit.
Funds are running a little low now that Dad's MIA.
I know, Dick. It's so like your father to think about the glory moment and forget about the day-to-day. Everything's got to be big and flashy. It's all million-dollar trust funds and you can't buy bread.
So you help us?
Well, I don't know, baby. It's a lot of money, but that's all there is. I mean, if you spend it all now, there'll be nothing left for college or, God forbid, an emergency. I have to think about your future.
Yo, maybe we can come live with you. Dude, stop.
Sweetheart, you know we spend most of the year in Europe.
So I like Europe.
Most of the year.
Even though last time she was mentioned, it was because she had a family up in San Francisco, right? Which is it, show?
I assume that's where they are when they're not in Europe.
But then wouldn't Dick have said, my mum's in Europe most of the time with her new family? Maybe she didn't tell Dick where they spend time because she really didn't want to see him, and understandably.
Relatable content.
But it just was a bit heartbreaking, I thought, for Cassidy, because he seems like the more emotional Casablancas brother.
Yeah.
And she's like, yes, I'm afraid you can't come to Europe to live with me. No reason, though.
Yeah. This lady sucks.
But she signs the thing, presumably so she doesn't have to take responsibility for her children.
Upon which Dick takes out, you know, $50 to buy a French maid outfit to give to Kendall that she can wear while she's dusting his armoire or something.
Well, she's already dusted a vase.
Yeah.
Did a good job.
Well, and that was her audition. She got the job. Yeah. Helen, I need to understand something, and I assume you've already done the research. What is up with French-made uniforms? Are they truly French?
Oh, yes. Thanks for thinking this is the area of my expertise.
Let me tell you what, if you Google French maid's uniform, as I just have, there are a variety of women in a variety of poses just waiting to be looked at in your Google search results.
So it seems that it's from like 19th century maid uniforms that used to be worn in saucy plays.
Aha.
Where presumably people were like, oh, there's the maid, which means you can sexually assault her with impunity. And also she's French, which is exotic, but also she can't speak English. Ha ha ha. And she's servile.
I see.
So I reckon that.
I regret asking, Helen. You're really kind of taking the wind out of... Yeah.
Love to ruin. Yeah, this is a really gross bit of power play. And also what's sad is Kendall is the only parent figure that hasn't deserted the Casablancas brothers.
Yeah.
So she's the best one.
Not that she wouldn't if she had somewhere to go.
Dick, by the way, is wearing a t-shirt that says Going Commando.
Oh, God, help. What a douche.
Do you think Dick is partly acting so douchily just to front like he doesn't mind that both of his biological parents have ditched him? Cassidy clearly does mind.
Yeah, there's probably some amount of that going on.
I've enjoyed Kendall so much in this season so far, but I felt very sad for her this episode. Because she's a resourceful person, but she is dependent.
Yeah.
And things are not going her way.
So her next play is to check in with another rich guy that she sleeps with. His name is Logan. And she's like laying it on pretty thick about their connection and stuff.
That was perfect, baby. Oh. It feels so good to be with you. I just want to be with you all the time.
Bit of advice. When looking for a sugar daddy, at least pick the richest guy in the hotel suite. I'm sorry. Did that hurt your feeling?
I can't believe you just said that to me. Doesn't this mean anything to you?
It does. It means I'm getting laid. And I owe your village a goat.
This exchange between them is bad. It's bad for Logan. Logan, you look like a real ass.
When sex person versus sex person happens, it's brutal.
You want to go back to playing grab ass with cheerleaders that have just mastered missionary? See ya. You want things to keep going the way they've been going? I'm going to need a few things.
I'm sorry, see ya was option A? Bessie, when the milk stops being free, I stop drinking it.
Then what am I supposed to do?
Frankly, my dear, you know the rest.
Logan does a Gone with the Wind reference.
Oh, hooray!
But he also says he stops drinking milk, so at least someone here rejects milk at some point.
This is the only thing I can back in this scene.
I don't think he ever at any point gave a particular impression that he was into Kendall for more than just distraction.
Right. But he doesn't have to be a piece of fucking garbage about it.
No, but you know Logan, he loves to go the garbage route. As Kendall gets dressed and is about to leave, her eyes land on the gigantic door handles of Duncan's room. He exits the shower to see Kendall naked on his bed, offering some sexy scratching. What a bold move. It's very much cutting to the chase when you're like, here I am naked. I have not psychologically prepared you.
Ready to scratch and be scratched.
No flirting today. I'm nude and ready to scratch.
We don't know exactly how much time has passed between this moment and the moment that Logan sees Kendall leaving Duncan's room.
The time of this episode, it takes months and minutes.
Uh-huh.
Well, Logan's got into the channel hopping and chip eating by the time Kendall leaves Duncan's room, fully clothed.
You ever think about just getting a job?
This is my job.
It's so sad. She'd be so good at the right job, as I've said before. But later, when Duncan's getting ready to leave in his polo neck, Logan makes some subtle inquiries about whether Duncan and Kendall got it on.
Hey, Kendall wasn't bugging you yesterday, was she?
No.
Good. Good. Because
When I saw she was in your room for a little while, I got nervous. You know, I know how she likes to talk a guy's ear off.
She was just asking for my help with something.
And Duncan is good at lying.
Yeah, a little too good. A little too smooth.
Because he's such a guileless-seeming character. And is he lying to protect Logan's feelings or protect Kendall's dignity or because Veronica's present and he doesn't want to have to explain stuff to her? Place your bets.
So many questions.
Answer me, Jenny! So that part of the episode is left inconclusive for Kendall. She's really slid down the power rankings.
Yeah. Logan's got a job for Veronica, and you know because he visits the toilet office.
Toilet office!
The sweet, familiar toilet office.
Kendall is really very secondary to Logan's concerns this episode because, of course, he is accused of murder.
Right.
Logan needs Veronica to find out why the witness is setting him up. And even though she's so busy this episode,
she just can't resist. She can't say no.
I mean, when you're in a toilet office with someone who has thoughtfully printed out an out of order sign and waited there just in case you come in, which seems like a bold plan.
She just hangs that up during her office hours, which are, you know, twice a day every day. So when she is babysitting at the Fullers, Logan pops by to check in on this background check she's doing on the guy who says he called in from the bridge.
Yes.
And Logan sees a picture of this guy and he's like, that's not the guy, which is when we find out that Logan lied when he said he didn't remember anything.
Yeah. And his logic was, well, I figured that if I said I couldn't remember him, they would never be able to find him. And therefore, I could never be accused because there wouldn't be a
witness.
That
seems like really stupid logic, right?
Not the best. But then I guess he wouldn't have been operating at his smartest at the time when he was questioned by police about this, when he had been beaten up quite badly, was accused of murder, and his father had been revealed as the murderer of his ex-girlfriend who he was also having sex with.
Yeah, and also maybe he was like hungover by then.
That too. Quite the day.
It turns out this guy who allegedly saw Logan kill Felix is a plastic surgeon.
A respected plastic surgeon, no less, with that kind of early 90s maroon striped wallpaper. So that's serious. And we know this because Veronica goes to him to discuss her surgical options. How many days is this episode again? Has she got a time turner?
Purely unknown. Yes, she's got a time turner. Yeah, she's like, I don't know. What do you think I should get done? And this guy's like, listen, kid, I wouldn't do anything to you. And here is a body dysmorphia pamphlet. Please read it and stop trying to get plastic surgery. Thanks. And then he is off to be with a client, allegedly.
I've got a surgery, or have I? Because just as Veronica's out in her car leaving a message to tell Logan that the doctor is a mensch, she sees him driving off. Not a surgery after all, but she follows him all the way to a cigar shop.
Interesting.
Like, if she's teaming up with Duncan this episode, this would have been a useful errand to do the two-person work, because I reckon you could send Duncan into a cigar shop and he'd be like, I need to buy a present for my dad. Oh yeah, those ones are good, aren't they? Because he would have been around rich guys with cigars, whereas Veronica being in the cigar shop looking for a gift for her dad, it automatically feels like not an environment she's going to get her way in. Doesn't really matter, though, because she sees Dr. Griffith pick up a bag and leave.
Ba, ba, ba.
And then when she's home after the wretched sleepover, Keith sniffs her jacket and he's like, I smell cigar. And she's like, I just went there to use the bathroom, a likely story. And Keith's like, well, it's a notorious drug selling place. So you know how in episode 6 of the season, Jenny, you asked, why do people cigar? When we saw Lam chomping on a cigar.
Yes.
Is there some, hey, I'll give you a gift of cigars if you overlook the drug dealing that happens in our cigar shop thing happening? And, you know, I could call on my memories of this season, but this is purely speculative because I can't remember a fucking thing.
Well, it sounds like a good theory to me.
Thank you.
I can't remember either.
Yeah. And to be fair to me, I was in hospital and heavily medicated last time I watched season 2.
Yeah. You had just been to the cigar store and you had picked up your many prescriptions and you were living large.
Sure.
There's just one other thing that I wanted to mention in this episode, which is that Mayor Goodman is playing golf poorly.
Oh.
He tells Keith he wants to incorporate Neptune and make Keith the chief of police. And that's just like, I mean, good to keep in mind because I'm sure we haven't seen the last of that plot. But what I really wanted to tell you is over the PA at the golf club, the person who organizes people teeing up, I guess, says, Ruggiero Forsum, check in with the starter, please.
Uh-huh.
Ruggiero Forsum, check in with the starter, please. And of course, this episode was written by Diane Ruggiero. So I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
That, Josh Ohlers. Well done, Detective Youngs.
Yes.
Everyone's going to bid very highly on you in the police auction this year.
Yes, I'll be flexing, so.
I don't really understand what incorporation means. And I know it's important to this season, but I...
But you can't be arsed.
Well, it's just more that my brain can't wrap itself around it. Why'd you gotta make things so difficult, America?
Yeah. But it seems like rich people stuff and power stuff and Mayor Goodman wanting to perhaps stack the deck in his favor, you know?
And Woody says 9,000 people would live in the city of Neptune. So they'd need a chief of police. That doesn't seem like that many.
Do 9,000 people need a chief of police?
I was a bit baffled that Keith turns up on the golf course seemingly just for an impromptu chat, because they don't behave like Woody invited him there. And after about 2 minutes of chat, Woody just whizzes off on the golf cart. So it's not like, okay, let's go to lunch like we planned. So it seems like Keith just turned up there on the off chance.
Unclear what's going on here.
I don't understand incorporation and I don't understand this golf course rendezvous.
Mayor Goodman works in mysterious ways.
Well, this is a very tangled episode, and let's pay a visit now to our resident legal expert and Southern Californian marshmallow Law Dodds for today's lowdown.
Hooray!
So, Lo, we're back with the Richard Casablancas crimes, and we don't understand them.
Help!
Love a bit of SEC action.
Would he have to repay the money that people spent on the fake properties they bought from him?
Yes. So that would be what the government is attempting to do by seizing his assets. So even if he could, in theory, pay it all off, and even if Dick Sr. were willing to pay it all off, I don't think that would absolve him from any sort of punishment, you know, if someone steals your car and then gives it back, still a crime. But that is what the government's trying to do. They're trying to seize his assets in order to pay back all of the people who are going to claim damages from his fraud.
But when they say the house and cars are paid off, is that just a bit of MacGuffins? We don't have to worry about where the Casablancas brothers are going to live because all of the suites at the Neptune Grand are taken.
Yeah, that's a bit of lying. Well, that's a bit of, I don't know, what do you call it when the show lies in order to further the plot?
Bad writing.
Fiction.
So obviously you guys know if you hold something free and clear, it just means there's no loan on it. And in the government's case, if they're trying to seize assets from Mr. Casablancas, they would be happy that he did not have a loan or a lender to fight with about seizing the house and the cars. But in this case, I don't know why they said that other than to say, okay, Dick and Cassidy are not going to be out on the street.
A favorite topic of us in this section is intent.
Intent.
When Veronica and Duncan break into the Manning house, they're not like trying to steal anything. They're trying to solve a crime. So what can they be prosecuted for? General delinquency, errant crime solvery, detective tude.
I think that they could be charged with burglary, because if they are intending to steal that notebook, you just have to break and enter with the intent to commit theft or to commit a felony. So if they're intending to steal the notebook, it can be charged as a felony or a misdemeanor, probably a misdemeanor. But let's be honest, they're not trying to steal that notebook. So I think that the most they'd probably get charged with is trespassing.
Given that they found some valuable evidence, but on an illegal trip into the Manning house, is that evidence going to be admissible?
You're right. The police cannot rely on evidence that they would not have been able to get under the same means. So you can't just have some private person go and break all the, you know, Fourth Amendment rights. So they wouldn't probably be able to rely on that notebook. But thankfully, another shitty parent in this episode called Lamb and invited him into the bedroom. So the minute Veronica said, hey, I have some information for you. Lam would have had probable cause to search the closet once he saw the notebooks and saw the horrible little closet room. They would have enough probable cause to come back and search, get a warrant. And yeah, hopefully those parents are going down.
If there is an officer of the law persistently outside your house staring through your kitchen window, who do you call about that?
The police are harassing me. I mean, you could call the ACLU, but I think that dad is not going to do anything, because obviously he's trying not to invite more scrutiny of his family.
I think the thing to do is call Vinnie Van Lowe and hire him to go do something really stupid and obvious nearby that will lure Lam away.
Perfect.
I think that's the ticket.
He should just hire Vinny to park behind the officer and watch the officer.
I do find this season to be very up and down and the pacing to be very stop-start, because they're like, okay, this plot, picking it back up. But some other stuff. But when stuff is good, I do find it very thrilling.
Yeah.
And I think I've appreciated that the mystery of the week has been tied to longer plot arcs or characters that are in this for the long haul, rather than just some random who shows up with a missing dog or shoes that don't match. And what the fuck is up with the Goodman family?
I really don't like that. I really didn't like that.
I think if they're so paranoid about mess, there's no way they would allow a rowdy sleepover for teen girls.
Right. But it seems that Gia and her little brother are treated very differently.
Yes. Oh, the bleakness. Jenny!
Yes.
Were there any lines that enlivened this episode for you?
You know, Helen, there's a global pandemic. I'm sheltering in place. I only go to the grocery store every 2 weeks, and I map out very fastidiously what will be eaten when. And I forgot to get ice cream.
No!
On my last shopping trip.
Boo!
Therefore, my line pick for this episode is a small child screaming, I want ice cream.
It's as if the line came straight from your soul.
Exactly.
Can you order some on Postmates?
I could, but I think I'll just wait until I go to the store again.
It's your punishment.
Yeah, that's what I'm like writing in my composition book. I will remember to buy ice cream this time. I will remember to buy ice cream this time.
Well, I enjoyed pretty much all of Ms. Hauser's STD lesson, but particularly when Jane sneezed and Ms. Hauser says, see how much you're sneezing when you have gonorrhea. Probably the same amount.
Dude, Ms. Hauser, I hope she comes back many times.
What a grumpy single legend.
Yes.
With a real shit son.
Single legend.
And how do you score this episode, Jenny?
I felt like it was fun, interesting, mostly fast. There were some like lulls, but like there was plenty going on, but not too much going on. I was very riveted pretty much the whole time. So I'm happy to give it like 4.75 shirtless sheriffs up for auction. And yourself?
Yeah, I thought it was thrilling, and the breath was genuinely taken out of me at the end when Lam does this incredible thing. But it's very sad as well. It's a sad episode for Kendall. It's a very sad episode for children in horrible family situations. And it's a shit episode for Veronica, because she must be exhausted and having such a boring, irritating time.
Yeah.
I will give it 4.2 black polo necks.
Yes. Well, that was this episode of Veronica Mars Investigated.
Case closed.
That was Veronica Mars Investigation Season 2, Episode 7, Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner.
Watch Season 2, Episode 8 and join us next time to investigate it.
Find the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at VMIPod.
And don't forget to join us on the 30th of May for a tweet along on Simulwatch. Ooh. For Vara,
Mistress of the Dark. You know, the complete title is very important.
Sorry.
To the whole
Sorry.
Vibe, Helen.
I need to educate myself.
The website where the show lives, shoes off please when you visit, is vmipod.com.
You can find our merch on there. You can find episode transcripts on there. You can find cards to distinguish all the rich white boys of Neptune from each other on there. Some championship work by Jenny Owen Yotes.
Bless you, Helen.
I am Helen Zaltzman, and you can hear my other podcasts, The Allusionist, at theallusionist.org, which is back after a break with the history of the keep calm and carry on trend. Words to be irritated by / calmed by.
Ha!
I'm irritated. Maybe you're calmed, but find out why you're irritated or calmed. You can find the show at theallusionist.org, and you can find my other podcast, Answer Me This, at answermethispodcast.com. And I was recently a guest on the Comedian's Comedian podcast talking about funniness.
I'm Jenny Owen Youngs. When I'm not making this podcast with Helen, I'm making my other podcast, Buffering the Vampire Slayer, which you can hear on all the pod places. You can also listen to the music that I make that has nothing to do with podcasts or 90s TV for the most part at JennyOwenYoungs.com.
What a lovely thing to do for yourself.
What the heck?
I meant for them, Jenny, not for you to do for yourself. What a lovely thing you've done for them that they can do to themselves. The thing being to listen to your music themselves. That you make
Got
yourself.
It. Okay.
Keep up.
Okay. This episode was edited and mixed by Helen Zaltzman.
Yes, it was. The music is by Martin Ostwick and Jenny Owen Youngs.
The sheriff of our blessed town, our quiet little town, which might become incorporated soon, is Hrishikesh Hirway.
The show is distributed by PRX.
Until next time, who is your daddy?
Who is your daddy? Is he on the boat by himself? If you ever want to come by, smoke a J and fool around.
No! Please, no!
There's not many positive dad models in this episode.
There are, like, no positive... Keith barely even shows up.
He's just hanging out on the golf course in case one of his friends happens to be there.
Yeah, exactly.